Hey, Sam, thanks for coming in so quickly. We recorded an episode yesterday that was about to come out, and we discussed Trump and Musk. And in light of today's events, we decided to jump back in here. So thanks for jumping in so quickly.
A few things have happened. So I guess we're going to record an addendum now and then tack that on to the back of the episode that was destined to arrive today.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Okay, we're back. Hey, Sam, how are you?
Hey, good to see you.
Good to see you too. Okay, we have a lot to get to today, but
what's happening?
Well, just a quick housekeeping before we do. I need to clarify some things. This isn't for you, this is for the audience. Many in the audience have already picked up on this, but again, just to clarify, the goal of this series is more from Sam on current events more often. My job here is to draw more energy out of Sam to surface his ideas in a format that's a little looser than the podcast. So the tone will be more casual. If the pacing is faster, that's all intentional. I'll sometimes play devil's advocate and even exaggerate positions, whatever it takes to keep things moving. None of this is about me, so don't get caught up on what you think my positions actually are.
This is your response to some hate mail?
Oh, well, this is just to clarify. I think a lot of people, most people got it, but some people were confused. And and one of the things, one of the reasons why we didn't bring on another academic or intellectual is that they would show up with their own agenda, and that's not what we wanted here. We wanted to really push you around. And so this will feel different from the polished conversations and essays that the audience is used to. Again, that's intentional. And this series is not meant to be a replacement for anything. So all those wanting more science podcasts, those are still happening. It's simply in addition to what we're already doing or what you're already doing, Sam. And lastly, it's a work in progress. So who knows where this still may go? I hope that helps.
Well, it is a thankless job. So thank you for it.
Well, thank you for making the time for us, because I do think that many in the audience do enjoy hearing more from you. And so we're going to do more of these as long as that is the case. All right. Yesterday, Elon Musk tweeted, "I'm sorry, but I just can't stand it anymore. This massive, outrageous, pork-filled congressional spending bill is a disgusting abomination. Shame on those who voted for it. You know you did wrong. You know it." Any thoughts there, Sam?
The first thing I notice is the phrase "anymore," right? So like, just how long has he been putting up with the stupidity and incompetence that he can now no longer stand? I mean, he's been shilling for this administration to a degree that would be impossible to exaggerate. On his own account, he loves Donald Trump more than as much as any straight man can love another man. Let's see how long that lasts.
And Trump was right about everything too.
Yeah, Trump was right about everything. He has shown nothing but contempt for anyone who would take the opposite side of that debate to any degree. I mean, I don't know how to interpret his utterances at this point. The man seems so dysregulated. I mean, having watched that press conference last week, or at least long sections of it, something's obviously not right with him psychologically.
Right. Well, he had apparently a phone call with Speaker Mike Johnson on Monday, and he said that Elon Musk seemed to understand the virtues of the legislation, and he was very disappointed and surprised to hear him come out, I guess, a couple of days later.
Yeah, so I think Elon is capable of surprising a lot of people, it seems. He's one person, one moment, another person, the next. I certainly have experienced that surprise over a longer time course.
Does it not concern you that he couldn't make a real dent in reducing the debt? I mean, it looks like Trump's new bill could add $2.4 billion to the debt. And I mean, Elon, for all of all the stuff you say about him, he's obviously quite gifted in some areas. And the fact that he just took a wrecking ball and still ended up, I mean, just in some accounts, adding more to the debt.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to find out more about what Doge actually accomplished. I think at this point, it's pretty easy to see that the main thing it accomplished was chaos. And the reduction of morale among otherwise well-intentioned and competent people in our government, and colossal brand damage for Elon and his companies, right? And that's the main effect. Yes, he found some waste and abuse, presumably, but I think that the lesson that people are drawing now is that there's not nearly as much fraud or waste or abuse to be found in government spending as many of us would expect. You know, Elon claimed he was going to find $2 trillion, then he knocked that down to $1 trillion. He claims to have found something like $150 or $170 billion. I think estimates are that it's much less than that. And that, you know, perversely, you know, all of this chaos may have in fact added cost to the government. I mean, it's been a disaster, and it should be viewed as a disaster. I mean, I'm sure right of center, they still imagine great things were accomplished because of the level of lying, frankly, that Elon and Trump perpetrated. I mean, they stood before the country and said that millions of people are receiving Social Security checks and they're 150 years old or otherwise dead. That's just not true, right? They lied about that. Trump said it, I think, in his State of the Union, lying about that. I'm sure Elon is still lying about that. And that sits atop a long list of lies. It's just the truth of the matter, per Matt Iglesias's Substack article this morning, is that Social Security just had some weird practice of keeping lots of void accounts still on the books for some data keeping, bureaucratic principle that I don't understand. But no one was getting these checks, and everyone knew over there that no one was getting these checks. And, the Doge team just didn't know how to interpret what they saw there, and they quite recklessly announced to the world that millions of people were getting paid. And that's just, everything you hear about what they were up to suggests a level of callousness and contempt and recklessness that is, those moods were their guiding principle. And again, it remains to be seen whether the real goal was efficiency and not just the demoralization of the so-called deep state, right? I mean, that has been announced by people like Russell Vogt that the goal is to have everyone working for the government get up in the morning and feel nothing but depression and terror or something. That's not the verbatim quote, but pretty close. Like they just to be afraid to come into work because of how fucking awful their lives are. Do we really want an approach to government that maximizes for that attitude?
Given this fallout, both of these men are two of the most powerful people in the world, and they have massive platforms, and they're petulant, and they're babies, and they're bullies. How do you feel about what could happen between the two of them?
I hope they collide appropriately, and we get to see in the scattering of controversy their true characters at this point. I mean, I just think our society has to, our culture politically and elsewhere has to lose its patience with failures of integrity and dishonesty. Above all, we should want competence and integrity from the people who purport to be guiding our society towards some end, right? And insofar as people are revealed to be liars and crooks and double dealers and just fatally compromised by their own conflicts of interest, just avaricious lunatics of the sort that we see in Trump and company, his rapacious family that's just grifting, is on everything that can be put within arm's reach. We should lose our patience for this. I mean, this is disgusting, right? It's like we have to feel a capacity for moral revulsion over this sort of stuff. This is not normal. This is not, much less good. And how we get to the point where we all just vomit in unison, I don't know, but we have to get there.
Yeah. Well, is it possible that we needed a Trump or a Musk type or both of them in Doge to begin to pop the hood?
To realize how bad Trump and Musk and Doge are?
No. To start taking the debt seriously. I mean, do you really think if Kamala Harris was elected, we'd be doing that? Do you think there'd be an abundance movement without Trump? I mean, is there some credit that goes there?
I mean, it's a interesting question, but you're saying that any kind of pendulum swing back to sanity can be credited to just how bad things have gotten. Well, okay, but like, do we have to rush toward the cliff in order to finally to be safe?
I'm saying we were rushing toward the cliff. No one was addressing.
We're still rushing toward the cliff. I mean, we still haven't figured out an appropriate response to the debt.
Okay, but the last administration wasn't focused on that.
No, and then nor is this one, apparently, right? It's adding trillions.
Well, this one is at least pretending to.
No, but it's not even pretending to at this point. That's why Elon can't stand it anymore. Anymore probably means the last 30 seconds, but he can't stand it anymore. This is an abomination, this bill on his account.
Okay, I'm going to shift gears.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. I know you're going on Jordan Peterson's podcast soon, so I don't want to talk about him for a moment. He's been credited for bringing so many people back to Christianity 2.0, more of the, live and let live Christians versus the 1980s, or I guess the 1480s for that matter. I think there are a number of reasons why Jordan has been so effective here, and I want to come back to him in a moment, but coinciding with his efforts is a massive loneliness epidemic, and it's very real. given your concerns with religion and the current inability for any other organizations to recapitulate a communal experience in quite the same way religion has been able to, do you feel differently now about people finding their way back to faith, you know, until AI, as you said, maybe could, you know, dream up something that solves all of these concerns? Isn't religion a better alternative for some people?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's, if you caveat it that way, I think I can probably say, yes, it might be a better alternative for some people. But, you know, prison is a good alternative for some people. I mean, it's just, is it the best alternative for any person? I doubt it, right? I mean, just, you know, Christianity, if we could edit the homophobia out of Christianity, if we could edit the expectation that...
But they have. I mean, a lot of new, that's what I'm saying, 2.0.
Well, no, but like really edit it so that it made absolutely no sense to be homophobic. Like there's no recourse to the teachings that could get you homophobia.
Okay, but there are a lot of people that are looking away that these days and just don't pay attention to that.
They're
ignoring that. So I think there is a new version of it, and people who are looking for purpose and community, after what so many people have seen social media do, it's just ripped society apart, and it's also just made people feel so alone, or it's at least contributed, I believe, in a big way. Why not encourage people, as Jordan has, to find faith? And I'm sure there's other reasons there as well, but for purpose and community. I mean, I don't necessarily understand the Catholicism part. It feels very ritualistic. I would imagine people would look for something a little bit more lightweight for their connectivity, but I kind of get why people are doing it. You know, as somebody who was a former practicing Jew, as I've said this before, I really miss community, and there's just nothing that's replaced that for me.
Yeah. Well, I do think that's a void, and we need to fill it. But the question is, can we fill it with something better and more reasonable and not intrinsically divisive, not intellectually embarrassing, doesn't require any lies to oneself or to one's children?
But I think this new brand of Christianity has minimized those sort of self-lies.
But it hasn't really. I mean, listen, it takes me 15 seconds to drill down in a conversation with any Christian to get to the crazy part, right?
Well, I mean, you're still going to hell, but I mean, there's still some benefit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there is no, if there is no crazy part, then it really isn't fulfilling. That's the thing, right? If there's no chewy center of superstition and otherworldliness and expectation of redemption after death, there has to be some magic in there. Otherwise, we're just talking about, you know, who's going to bring the egg salad for the picnic, right? I mean, it's like, can we figure out some other way to picnic? It's not just a tailgate. I mean, you're tailgating for God here. You're tailgating for eternity. And that's what makes it especially meaningful, right? And Jordan doesn't disavow that. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to talk about with Jordan. It's been a very long time since we've spoken, and I haven't really followed all of his, kind of the vagaries of his...
Well, but did you see that clip of him going, well, we're going to talk about that too in a second. Did you see that clip going around with him on the Jubilee podcast episode where...
I saw that it exists. I actually didn't watch. I think I saw, maybe I caught part of a clip, but I just decided to not pollute my brain with it in advance of my conversation with him. I could see that there was some kind of consensus forming online that he had not acquitted himself well in those conversations.
But do you not want to talk to him about that? I think it'd be very interesting to talk to him about it because... He seemed very evasive there.
I just didn't want to prejudice my, I can't imagine he wants to talk to me about it, right? And I don't know what I can say to him. I mean, I know how Jordan debates atheists because I've debated him. It would be unsurprising to me that if you stuck 20 atheists in a room with him, it wouldn't go very well. It's not like anyone on his side has good answers to the questions atheists pose. There are no good answers, right? I mean, the atheists, religious people, are slow to recognize it, but they're standing on a mountain of non sequiturs. And they recognize it in other people's faith, right? I mean, no Christian is convinced by the reasoning of Muslims in defense of their faith. And the reason why not is the same reasons that atheists are not convinced by Muslims or Christians. And it doesn't mean that's the end of the conversation. I mean, I believe a lot of things that many atheists are skeptical about. And I've experienced many things that atheists don't tend to experience because they don't tend to put their attention in those directions. So, I mean, as anyone who has followed my work knows, I'm very interested in quote, spiritual experience, although I think that word can be misleading, or mystical experience, or contemplative experience, or psychedelic experience. I mean, there are deep experiences that are clearly the wellspring of the world's religions. You know, when you start having experiences of this kind, it's not at all mysterious why people would walk around talking the way someone like Jesus is reported to have spoken like, or
has Jordan ever talked about psychedelics? Do you think he's ever had psychedelic experience?
Yeah, I know. I know he has. Maybe we should bring that up. But yeah, that came up in one of our debates. But in the debate, he seemed to suggest that if I took a larger dose of mushrooms or LSD, that I would recognize that Christianity was real, or that the archetypes that he had arrayed against me in that part of the debate were, you know, the correct story of.
I guess 5 grams is not enough. Was not enough for you, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, I remember him with quite effectively, at least for his crowd, saying something like, "Well, maybe you should up the dose." And yeah, I mean, it was a cute line, but I've certainly upped the dose, and we interpret that those experiences differently. I mean, it's just patently obvious to me that the only valid interpretation of those deep experiences, it has to be deeper than sectarianism or provincialism. It can't be that by sheer accident, the way our spiritual literature was, you know, parcelated centuries ago based on geography and linguistic barriers, that one of them found all the right answers to these, you know, deeper mysteries. And now that we have all the world's spiritual literature and religious literature and scientific literature in plain view, oh, look, lo and behold, you know what? It's the Eastern Orthodox Christians who really have it right, right?
Right. There's simply no way that if somebody were to be born somewhere on the planet with no exposure to Christianity and take 5 grams of mushrooms, they're just not going to discover Jesus. Impossible.
Well, they'll discover something, you know, in Jordan's defense, I think he would say they would discover something, you know, archetypally analogous to Jesus or the Christ story or something like that. Here I'm bending over backwards to prop up his argument. But even that's not true, right? And, you know, the Buddha story is quite different from the Jesus story, right? No one got nailed to a cross. No one was a living human sacrifice, right? I mean, there's a different logic to the whole project. And I'm not even saying the Buddha's story is the perfect template to think about. So anyway, there's a lot to talk about there, but
I think that'd be interesting. We also, Griffin put a list together for some of the things he's also said on climate change and Russia, Ukraine might be.
Right. But I mean, it's his podcast. I mean, I don't think I should go on his podcast to perform an intervention. He invited me to have a conversation. Presumably he wants to talk about something. So.
Well, when he's done, maybe say I have a few questions for you.
I mean, just to think of, you know, it'd be a little weird for me to invite someone on my podcast because I thought I wanted to talk to them about something. And then we flip on the mics and they have a list of instances where they think I put my foot in my mouth and they're going to, you know, go after me for them.
I think the audience would not welcome that,
but it would be kind of an odd, you know, odd way to.
Well, all you have to do is to say, listen, I have a few questions I want to get to first. And why don't we do that after? Great.
Right.
Yeah. I think it'd be interesting.
I mean, I really don't feel a need to perform an intervention on him. Obviously, I'm not going to be shy about pushing back on anything that I disagree about, but it just seems odd for me to say, hey, listen, Jordan, my team has found all of this digital dirt on you, and here's where you have embarrassed yourself. What about X, Y, and Z?
We're not trying to play gotcha. I think you're just looking to get some clarity, you know? And all right, before we move to the lightning round, I just want to quickly add one thing about Jordan and why I will always be a fan of his, and you were there. For no other reason, in 2018, I stood over both your shoulders, and I'm sure you saw this too, but I watched literally hundreds of young men walk up to him with tears in their eyes and say, you saved my life. And that was incredibly profound. So no matter how many times he puts his foot in his mouth, I'll always have respect for him for that.
Yeah.
And that was...
I share that. I mean, you know, Jordan and I obviously disagree about many things, but the fact that he has helped many people, I think, is undeniable. And that's a wonderful thing.
All right. We got to get to the lightning round, which means, of course, short answers, please. Which
okay, good
for
luck.
You means, you know, under a half hour.
I'm so good at that. So,
Sam, what gives you hope right now?
Well, that's a framing that doesn't really work for me. I mean, hope, you know, in my lexicon, hope is essentially a bad word. I mean, it's a little bit like, it's just the obverse of fear. I mean, I think of hope and fear as the same thing. I mean, you're worried, right? And hope is the antidote. You're applying hope as the antidote to worry in some sense. You know, I'm moving forward in a, you know, as one does in a, you know, positive frame of mind, realizing that there's immense uncertainty in the world. And it's, in some sense, seems to have grown more than I can ever remember it growing on multiple fronts, right? I do think we're living in in an unusual moment. It's not, I don't think it's just that I'm paying more attention to certain things. I think several dials have gotten turned up and, you know, we're hearing the airframe rattle more than normal.
I do recall growing up and just, you know, hearing my parents and other parents say how lucky we are to be growing up in a time with, you know, a microwave and a remote control, and how they had to walk to school six miles uphill each
internet,
way.
The internet. Continental ballistic missiles.
But it was a better time, I think, growing up in the 80s and the 90s. And today, I'm not looking at my kids thinking they have it easier. I think they have it harder.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, even just AI, just like if everything were perfect politically, right? If we had no concerns politically or geopolitically, there were no wars to worry about, and all we had was recent advances in AI, I think we would all be right to think that a lot is going to change very quickly here, and we're not quite sure how or whether those changes will be to the good.
All right, I got lots of these topics here. These are just the lightning round, quick topics from many of those.
I've already forgotten our
wonderful subscribers who went to the Substack page and helped us here. There's a request to talk to Scott Galloway. Didn't you just speak with him on his podcast?
Yeah, I don't know if that's out yet or not. Or I mean, I think maybe he's got a lot stacked up and he does them in advance. I don't know if because we did it some time ago. It was probably at least a month ago.
We'll find out about it. But yeah. Okay, audience, that's coming.
But that was a good conversation. I like Scott a lot.
Yeah, he's great. I assume this changes nothing, but does it matter that the Israeli government supposedly supported and funded Hamas in order to avoid a two-state solution? And again, the quick version.
Certainly it matters to certain questions. Yeah, I mean, you know, to questions of Netanyahu's viability as a political figure, his integrity, his wisdom, etc. I mean, that's the very essence of a devil's bargain. So yeah, I mean, I don't have more detail on that. I've heard that story. I think, you know, Netanyahu's future is very uncertain, and it sounds like it should be given that he's a fairly corrupt figure, it sounds like. And he's obviously toxic for Israeli politics and for the optics of the current war. Whether that war would be different with a different PM or not, I don't know.
And you're going to be having, I forget his name, who's coming on in June?
Yeah, Haviv Retegur. Yeah, he's fantastic.
Great. So you can, I guess you'll get into that more. Could you talk more about climate change, especially now in the context of the Trump administration? Will that be something that's you're going to be bringing up a little bit more on your podcast?
I don't know. I mean, that has gotten pushed down the list of concerns, I think, for everyone, including me. I mean, it's slow moving, and so many of the other things we're worried about now are fast moving. Yeah, I mean, I just think among the many problems of Trumpism and populism and authoritarianism and anti-Semitism and everything else we've been talking about, you know, recently is... they represent massive opportunity costs. Again, well, just imagine having the bandwidth to really think about climate change. Wouldn't that be nice? It's not. I don't perceive myself as having that bandwidth at the moment, and the problem will still be here, presumably in a few years when we sort everything else out.
I think Greta Thunberg's not even on that right now.
Yeah, exactly.
She's left it for the moment.
She's got other fish to fry.
Exactly.
They appear to be Jewish fish.
Right. Speaking of that, the Qatari influence over the U.S., this actually seems like it needs to be a whole podcast.
Yeah.
An episode.
Yasmin Mohammed, the friend of the podcast and someone of whom I'm an enormous fan, is going to do a series on that topic. And I will be eager to boost that and help her with that. So
that's great. I can't wait to hear it. Why is it okay to feel pride about children, but not in other areas?
It's... Well, I mean, it's fun. I think there's a stage of
that was the one that stumped you.
It knocked me back. There's something incoherent about pride.
Yeah.
Honestly, at every stage, but I think there are stages in life where certain things are appropriate, and then you outgrow those things, right? And so, I think in personality formation, I think you know having self-esteem and having a very positive sense of self that's not delusional is useful. And that stage of development is childhood, right? I think as you grow, you want to unwind that, to be preoccupied with self and how your self stacks up compared to the selves of others. I think that's something you definitely want to outgrow. And those comparisons, even when they seem to be occurring in your favor, become less and less a source of happiness. I mean, there's something icky about comparison, and that emerges, you know, I think fairly early in life. It emerges, you know, even in childhood among friends, right? Like how much time do you want your 11-year-old child to be thinking that he or she is, you know, better at something than their closest friends, right? And like, and measuring themselves against, you know, in that kind of social comparison. I mean, it's just not, even that is not something you want to encourage. And pride very quickly reveals itself to be attached to that kind of structure of social comparison. I mean, there's an implicit comparison. Like when you say, you know, you did that, you really did great. You know, you were amazing up there on stage. That's fine. But it's very hard to divorce that from the comparison to all the people who weren't amazing. And if everyone's amazing, all of a sudden, you know, everyone gets a trophy and then where's the pride, right? So there's, you know, I think we want to encourage more and more. And again, I think these seeds should be planted very early, an aptitude for deriving happiness from the process, from the effort, from the experience, you know, each moment along the way. And yes, from the result, sure. And if there's a, you know, differential result that's just unignorable, you know, you got first place in the race, right? I mean, that adds to the fun. But yeah, I mean, everyone knows that putting too much on that leads to, you know, lunacy in the future, you know, in adulthood, right? I mean, the people who are too competitive, the people who are, you know, the crazy dad on the sidelines of the baseball game who's shouting at the umpire. I mean, like, it's all of that is pathological, and everyone knows it.
Yep. Are we done with BJJ?
Was
forever?
That short enough for you? Or was that a 10-minute answer?
Yeah, it's too long. Griffin, you're going to have to cut that shit down. Yeah. Are we done? Yeah. Are we done with BJJ forever?
Unfortunately, I think so. I mean, maybe I would play around with it briefly, but like, you know, as far as regular training, I just, you know, unfortunately, I've discovered that not training BJJ is the best physical therapy I've ever experienced, right? I mean, it is the thing that got rid of neck pain and hip pain and back pain. And I mean, it's just, I would expect, especially after this interval of some years, going back to the mat would just unmask all of those problems again. So
yeah, well, speaking of aging, what are your views on surgeries or other treatments like TRT to help us look and feel better as we live longer? Is that
surgeries, you mean like plastic surgery?
Yeah, just, you know, people are going to live to 100 beyond, and we're taking care of ourselves more and more. You know, what are your thoughts on people? Are you a naturalist? Are you somebody who's like, yeah, listen, get a little tug, take a little TRT, do whatever you can?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not doing anything myself at the moment, but I'm not especially judgmental of any of it. I mean, I think people should do whatever they want to do to feel better. I guess my concern, I mean, and the reason why I don't do anything of that sort is that I'm just worried about the risks. I mean, I will feel stupid being the outlier who has a bad outcome down one of those paths. And I know that, you know, bad outcomes are possible. And do I really want to be, you know, the one who dies on the operating table for whatever that, you know, elective surgery was? Or do I want to be the one who, I mean, I've actually forgotten what all the probabilities around bad outcomes from TRT, but I mean, they're just side, like if there were no side effects and no possibility of being very unhappy that you did one of these things, then yeah, I mean, then I've got zero. It's like buying clothing at that point, you know, why not wear the shirt you like?
I think we're going to have Peter Attia come on for a couple of minutes on one of these episodes and talk us through TRT and some of that. Cause right. I'd like to know what the,
Yeah, I mean, we have friends who are doing it and they seem to be happy they're doing it. And if my testosterone dropped below a certain range, I'm sure I would boost it too. You know, I mean, you know, weightlifting is one way to boost it. And I obviously do that. But so yeah, I mean, I've got zero judgment about any of that. I just think that the results are uncertain enough in most cases, and the side effect profile is unacceptable in many cases, and therefore I have not been tempted. But I mean, for those, you know, those who do it and have good results, I'm nothing but happy for them.
Yeah, I was about to say I'd be on it right now if I wasn't so petrified of needles. When they make a pill or something
for TRT,
that is as effective.
Yeah, but there are other, then look up the side effects or potential side effects or other things to worry about.
No, I'm saying I'm gonna reach out to Peter and say, hey, come on for a couple of minutes. Again, as we talked about this, the format of this show. I like the idea of just having maybe in the future a quick special guest to hop in and we could talk to. I don't know. We'll see how that goes. But time is up. As usual, I want to thank all of our subscribers who helped with these questions. I do like this lightning round thing. I think maybe we'll bring it back. And thank you, Sam, as always, for doing this.
Yeah.
I look forward
thank
to doing
you
it again with you.
Yeah, yeah, man. Fun.
Okay, Sam, we're back. Go.
Yeah. Well, a few things have happened. So I guess we're in the first hour of this blow up between Elon and Trump. Honestly, I'm just catching up to the news here. The last thing I saw was Elon alleging that Trump is in the Epstein files, and that's why they were not released. Many people saw that amazing footage of Kash Patel and Dan Bongino looking like deer in the headlights, messaging to their cult that there was nothing to see here, that that Epstein surely killed himself. Trust us. You know, I'm sure I trust that is true. In fact, he had many reasons to kill himself. But Elon is now pulling the wrapper off that whole thing, saying, no, Trump is implicated here. So I mean, all I can say is that that got much uglier and more insane than I would have anticipated in the first hour of the wheels coming off here.
Right. If they're throwing that out in the first inning,
yeah.
What else is coming?
I don't know. Where and also Trump is threatening to cancel Elon's contracts with Starlink and SpaceX and also the EV credits. So that was the EV credits being stripped in the bill, I think, is the thing that first got under Elon's skin.
I saw Bannon say something. I think Griffin said that he had talked about his immigration status and deported him.
I didn't see that.
And I think the only thing worse than Elon Musk being American is, well, I don't mean to say it that badly, but is him being a citizen of Russia or China or somewhere else. I think I'm not really sure we want that. I mean, he's...
Yeah, well, I can't imagine that that's in the cards, but who knows at this point? I mean, Elon's threatening to start a third party here. I think he polled his audience. I didn't see the poll come back. Last I looked, Tesla was down 14%. I don't know where it is now. I don't know if the stock price of Tesla is going to be a good indicator of public sentiment throughout this controversy, but I mean, I don't know what to say about it apart from the fact that, I think what I said in the podcast we just released was that when these two guys collide, I hope we see in the scattering who they really are and that people begin to care about the lack of integrity in our public figures. I mean, the lack of integrity is on full display because, of course, I mean, to take the Elon side of it first, I mean, there's nothing that Elon discovered in the last 24 hours about Trump that he didn't already know, right? I mean, he knows Trump is effectively evil, right? So this marriage of convenience was just utterly cynical and unethical from Elon's side. I mean, I think Elon has behaved like a psychopath. He deserves whatever pain comes to him in this collision with Trump. And I would imagine the pain is going to be abundant. And I think, on Trump's side, he deserves whatever he gets from Elon. I mean, I think, Elon can really damage Trump and Trumpism to some degree.
But don't you think the country suffers in some way? Or you think ultimately the country...
The country is suffering. I mean, the country has been suffering all the while. The country was suffering their friendship, right? I mean, I think they're... explosion is better for the country than their collaboration. I think the worst has already happened. I mean, that's, obviously I could be proven wrong here, but I think Elon and Trump as friends and enablers in this marriage of cynicism and avarice, I think was terrible. And I think the fact that it's blown apart is very likely only a good thing. Yes, is this a massive opportunity cost for our society? Of course. I mean, look what we're paying attention to. I mean, we're doing an emergency podcast here to respond to it. And, a war is raging in Ukraine and Gaza and risk is mounting on multiple fronts. I think the debt risk that Elon is pretending to care about is very real. Again, I think if the EV credits had been in the bill, he might not have exploded the way he did. I mean, I just think he's, the degree to which he's proven himself to be self-dealing, in his entanglement with our government has been jaw dropping from my point of view. I mean, I would extend this onus to all the oligarchs who sidled up to Trump, at the inauguration and decided to play nice with somebody who they know to be again, I mean, evil is a word which is to anyone who thinks I have Trump derangement syndrome will seem like just embarrassing hyperbole, but I really do think Trump and his effect on our society has been evil. It has damaged us in all kinds of ways that it'll take a generation to account for. And the fact that we had the richest people in our society, all of whom, literally all of whom, know Trump to have been a fake businessman propped up as a reality TV game show host, and just this confection brought to our society by Mark Burnett, advertised to half the country as a business genius when he was anything but. All these oligarchs knew that and pretended to respect him when it became convenient to do so. And now he has grifted himself into, you know, real wealth, and his second term is this, ravenous predation on, you know, every opportunity to enrich himself and his family. And all of these oligarchs have, at best, looked the other way, and at worst, in Elon's case, collaborated. And it's, we resemble a banana republic in ways that one could have scarcely imagined, even in Trump's first term. And a lot of the responsibility for that rests with Elon. So I just think, I'm trying to contain my Schadenfreude here, because Schadenfreude is easily available, but this whole thing is, it's going to be entertaining, but it really is, it's also embarrassing, right? It's also mortifying. It's like, this is just not good for our society. It's not good for our country. Just imagine how we look to our allies and our enemies on the world stage. You know, all of this is bad, even though some of it's going to be fun to watch.
It always feels to me like no matter what Trump does, he's always just going to double down and get out of this. But for some reason, I have this feeling right now that this one may be a King Kong versus Godzilla. This one may hurt him in some way. I almost had that same feeling when Zelensky was in the White House, that it was just this feeling of discomfort. Or do you think, 48 hours from now, we'll be on to something else? You think they make up or?
No. Well, I don't know how they make up at this point. He went straight to the Epstein files. That's pretty strong. Yeah. These people are so cynical, and they're so without shame, and their cults don't require shame from them, right? So like nobody's keeping score. There's no burden of consistency. There's no burden of integrity. These guys can they can do anything, right? And they don't lose their fans, right? So, they have some of the same fans. So it'll be interesting to see how the cult divides.
Yeah. How do you think that's going to?
I think if I had to guess, I think Trump will get the better of this tug of war with the fans, because why do I think that? I mean, that really is just an intuition. I think on some level, Elon needs smart people to admire him. He needs people who believe that climate change is a thing to buy his electric cars. And let's just take that one piece here. You know, for the most part, Trumpistan doesn't believe in climate change, or if they believe in it, they don't care about it. They don't want electric cars, right? They love Elon for other reasons, but you know, Elon still needed smart, sane people to buy at least that one product, right? I don't know. I think when Elon becomes no longer useful to Trump and Trumpism, when he gets despised by the Bannons of the world as a South African grifter, I think, it's funny to imagine some of the people who were swept into Trump's orbit because of Elon, whose heads are now exploding. I mean, what is David Sachs doing with his brain right now, right? David Sachs
is— How's that membership looking like at that club?
Yeah, executive branch membership. I want a membership now.
Yeah.
Just so I can meet these guys at the bar and see whether their heads are still on their shoulders. I mean, so what does he do? Like, Elon's one of his closest buddies. He was brought into prominence in Trumpistan because of that association. He's employed by the government as the crypto and AI czar. He's shilled for Trump in the most embarrassing way for years now. He knows Trump's effectively a moron across several registers that he cares about as a businessman, as a tech leader, et cetera, et cetera, and has pretended otherwise.
Yeah, you're right about some. Just the amount of people I'm just thinking about right now who just, you know, bit their tongues, didn't say anything, just would not speak up, knew the truth about either one of them.
Wouldn't, but worse, it's not that they didn't say anything. They pretended otherwise. They pretended Trump is playing 4D chess. They pretended that his ethical indiscretions didn't matter, right? They pretended January 6th was nothing, right? And now Elon is referencing the fucking Epstein files, right? I mean, basically saying Trump is a child rapist and that's who I've been collaborating with all this time. I knew it. Do you think Elon just found out about the Epstein files 14 minutes
ago?
No,
but does he join the ranks of Tucker and Candace now? Where does he go from here? You don't think he's on Tucker's podcast in the next 48 hours?
Well, maybe. I mean, yeah. So the way Elon can hurt Trump is obviously he has unlimited resources, or at least until Tesla goes to zero. I mean, who knows what is possible here? But
what's the ticker on it now? Is it still down 14%? Is it?
I can't see it. I haven't
got
seen
the
that
ticker.
But you know, at a certain point, there's going to be a margin call on Elon's loans. I'm sure. I mean, he's highly leveraged against his Tesla interests. Obviously, he's got SpaceX and everything else. But I mean, I don't know if there's conceivably any real economic jeopardy for Elon, given the fact that as of an hour ago, he had something like $400 billion. I mean, even if that went down to $10 billion, he's still fine. And I don't see how it could ever be driven that low. But
aside from his finances, what if he sidles up to Tucker and Candace and, you know, he's in that world?
Well, no, but his finances, the size of his war chest in this particular war is worth reflecting on. I mean, he could self-fund the biggest political uprising the world has ever seen, right? He could primary every single Republican in Congress. He could do whatever he wants, right? I mean, he could buy CNN and make it the Elon Musk network, and it could just be all day, every day, what's wrong with Trump, right? He's got magic Christian style wealth here. He can buy all of Trump's assets and chuck them in the trash can. He could have a lot of fun. You know, I sort of envy him the fun he could have hating Trump here.
The irony of that kind of fuck you money.
Yeah, no. I mean, it would be great to see him truly go to war with Trump and Trumpism. I would love to see that, you know, because again, Trump deserves it and so does his rapacious family. And that would be great.
Any version of the Dems taking Musk back? I mean, he was a Democrat.
Elon needs help as a person, right? I mean, obviously he's not well. I mean, I do see him as a story of a psychological and social unraveling enabled by all of the sycophants in his circle who won't tell him no or won't try to intervene.
But if it's truly a mental health problem, which it looks like there's a mental health issue here, the Dems might be understanding of that. He gets help.
I mean, he's got it. It's like all of this harem of, you know, surrogate mothers and 14 kids. And I mean, all of the warning signs are everywhere in this guy's life. I mean, he's living some, you know, weird science fiction scenario in his private life that's spilling out into public on an hourly basis. Where are his fucking friends? I mean, I know these guys. I can imagine that they're, you know, afraid to perform some kind of intervention on him. But man, I mean, he's just, the guy has been unraveling for, you know, years now. And honestly, his engagement with Trump has been a sign of that unraveling, right? I mean, it's like he went berserk in a way that Trump and his fans loved, but he was still obviously berserk because, again, he didn't discover anything about Trump or anyone else who he's now, you know, savaging online in the last 24 hours, right? He's known all this, right? And he's been willing to play with all of this. And I mean, that is the banality of evil, right? I mean, that's just...
But as you said about Musk, I mean, in terms of his good friends, they did go along with, you know, they supported him and they did go along with his behavior. And, you know, obviously
they
a good friend...
They opened a fucking club for $500,000 a head.
Yeah.
This is so tawdry and embarrassing. So, I mean, it will be amazing to see it finally splatter everywhere, you know, on all the walls and the ceiling. But it should have never happened, right? Like everything that was wrong with this was visible from 1,000 yards out. The point to realize here is that nothing is being newly discovered, right? Like the thing that Elon is finally reacting to was bad yesterday and the day before that and a year ago. All these people deserve each other on some level.
So what do you think tipped him over? I mean, I think you agree with Elon on the big bill, and maybe he agrees with you.
Of course. I mean, I think, I'm sure he was provoked by the EV credits and that I don't really respect that. But of course, I mean, yes, adding, what is it, $2.4 trillion to the debt, that's obviously a bad thing. And, you know, if the bond market seizes up, we'll know why. Yeah, I mean, all of this is scary from an economic point of view. And yet, you know, as we, you know, we've already talked about, Doge was not the sane response to any of that.
So where do the tech guys go now? Where is Sachs? Does he stay in government? Does he defect? What does he do?
I don't know. They're going to have to pick their horse here. I mean, I did see that. I think Elon said something like, just a reminder, Trump's going to be out of office in 3.5 years, and I'm going to be alive for 40 years or something like that. I don't know. Again, I think we run the risk of, I mean, again, this is objectively entertaining. I'm not, going to deny that. And it's, I haven't concealed the fact that there's some fun to be had at the expense of all of these people. But this really is just bad for our culture. I mean, it's a symptom of how fully our culture has unraveled. I largely think of that as a story of what social media has done to us, and X in particular. Again, Elon's culpability for that is self-evident.
Yeah, this feels like a moment where people are just taking a breath, and I feel like a lot of people are shooken up by this.
This is the Real Housewives of Mars, I mean, this is the Elon Trump show now, and it's not good. I'm sure I will be glued to the computer at various points today and until this normalizes, because
maybe Mark Burnett's producing this.
Mark Burnett has a lot to atone for.
He might be producing this.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't, this is going to be a race to the bottom, and we'll see where the bottom is. I have to think that Trump, because he is Trump and truly has a cult behind him to which he never has to apologize, right? I mean, honestly, even if the Epstein files came tumbling out and, it was shown that he had, had sex with a 14-year-old on Epstein's plane, right? Certainly stranger things have happened. And I don't think Trump would lose his fans. I mean, honestly, I think he's cultivated a personality cult beneath him that is totally imperturbable by scandal. Trump's genius consists in having recognized this. When he said in 2015, that I could, I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and not lose a single voter, that was an insight into just how toxic our culture has become, and just how he was able to play that side of culture perfectly. And so, I think because he's got that, and I don't think Elon does, I think there's Elon has destroyed his reputation among the people who matter, I think, right? I mean, I think that's, I see it as non-recoverable unless he, he goes into rehab and comes out with a mea culpa, the scope of which we have never seen achieved. Yeah, and that may yet happen. But short of that, I just think, I think Elon can be damaged by scandal in a way that Trump can't. So there's an asymmetry there that is worth noticing.
Well, we may have to jump back on again if something else happens.
This is not going to be over by next week.
Yeah, no. Yeah, and I think we all need to check on our MAGA friends. They're hurting right now.
Yeah. Yes, I will check
hug
on my
MAGA.
Two.
Yeah. Hug somebody MAGA right now and let them know that you love them.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, thanks for jumping back on, Sam.
Yeah. Nice.